The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the Chief Investment Advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Okay, now that we got all the disclaimers out of the way, it is great to have you with us again on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. And for the next hour, we'll be talking about working toward a carefree retirement. Man, retirement can be a topic that can scare people. There's no reason for it to scare you, particularly not if you have a fiduciary managing your money, investing your money, and getting you into a position of financial independence in retirement. That is what they specialize in at Aptus Wealth Management. They're located in Lewis Center, very easy to get to, just off Route 750, not far from the 23-270 interchange. Josh joins me every Monday at 12:30 p.m. for Money Monday on the Bruce Hooley Show on 98.9 The Answer, and we sit together for an hour on the weekend. This show will replay at noon tomorrow, and we always start, Josh, with the offer of a free, no-obligation consultation, which people can accomplish by reaching out to your office at 614-917-1040, or by making their appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. And we always also start with what's new in the headlines and how that affects people's retirement. And as we often do every month, we get the jobs report out either yesterday or today. And it says 275,000 new jobs in February above the estimates. That's kind of been normal lately. And how did the markets react to that jobs report?
You know, the market liked it, I guess, number one. But as we look at, you know, all of these reports, which we kind of say ad nauseum, with one hand you get good news, with another hand, you know, it's the same report, two different takes.
He loves me, he loves me not. The reports and the headlines.
So, you know, we added 275,000 new jobs, which is more than the roughly 200,000 that the predictors had anticipated. It was down from over 350,000 new jobs in January. So you would think that would be a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing because we thought there was going to be less. But then, you know, they also simultaneously in almost every, you know, economic forecast explanation of the jobs report said, but the job market seems to be cooling. Hours worked are actually lowering. So sure, you have a job, but, you know, you're working at a factory and you're not getting as many hours. So is this a good thing or a bad thing? And they also simultaneously said that the time it is now taking to find a new job is significantly longer than it was just a year ago. So if you remember, rewind the clock back to about 3 years ago, 2021.
Pandemic checks coming, arriving in the mail.
Yep. We had the great resignation.
Sure.
Right? People were making the decision that, you know, in light of everything that's going on, I would rather work from home. All of these kind of decisions were being made. And a lot of people were quitting their jobs, or at least transitioning to new jobs at higher rates. Well, now they have to call it the great something, and they're calling it the great stay, as very few people are leaving their jobs, which is making that transitory environment a lot less, so it's more difficult to find a job. So whether this is good news or bad news, I think it's great that we added new jobs, but it also is simultaneously hits us with it's cooling.
Yeah, it's cooling, and, you know, again, that can be good, that can be bad. We'd like to see a robust economy, but the economy can be too robust, and that can talk the Fed off cutting interest rates, which would lower the rates that people, first-time home buyers or any home buyer, would get on a mortgage loan or a car loan or anything like that. And we'll get to the rates and what Chairman Powell, the Fed, had to say this week, which I think the markets also liked. But what do you make of hourly or the hours going down on people's jobs? Is that companies trying to keep people below a certain level so they don't have to pay benefits, or what do you make of the hours going down?
Well, I think, you know, oftentimes we talk about averages, but we don't talk about medians. You know, it's like if Jeff Bezos walks into this studio right now, our average net worth just went through the roof.
Man, I feel great.
Our median net worth didn't change at all, right? Well, similarly, when you look at the jobs report, there's a myriad of reasons for that. In one instance, you could say, well, certain entities have certainly felt the pinch of all of this kind of economic quantitative constricting or lessening in the money supply, increasing interest rates. We simply just don't have the demand to keep people working in our factory to build more things because we can't go and borrow the money necessary to do it and still be profitable. On the other hand, you know, we could argue that that supply issue that was caused by COVID has been somewhat normalized in certain industries. So, you know, were they working overtime hours and now they're not? And, you know, they kind of just give these broad brushstroke responses. Hours are down. Well, compared to what? Were people working 80 hours a week before and now they're only working 76? We don't tend to get those numbers.
No, we don't. But it's often hard to make sense of the numbers that we do get. And if you would like to access the expertise of Josh and the Aptus team, you can do that with no obligation at all. It is a free consultation. My wife and I sat for it, and we were at a position where retirement wasn't just over the hill, but it was out there where we could see it. And we were nervous about whether we were making good decisions with the money that we had saved and the money that we were investing. If you have that same concern, if you have, you know, a long runway to retirement, you're young, you don't want it to get away from you, you want to make prudent decisions, that's a conversation they'd love to have with you at Aptus as well. And it's easy to have it, and you'll understand it. You'll gain peace of mind. You'll gain information. I think knowledge is power, and you'll definitely get much more knowledge and much more understanding of investing when you sit with Josh and his team for your free, no-obligation consultation. 614-917-1040 is the number to call to set that up, 614-917-1040. Or you can also do it by making your appointment online. Their web address is aptuswealth, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. We are inching toward a 4% unemployment rate, which we have not had in a long, long time. The unemployment rate in the latest numbers, 3.9%, first increase in unemployment in 4 months. We used to consider full employment 4% unemployment. So I don't know that that's a significant number, but it is inching up. And, you know, for the longest time, we debated about, are we in a recession? Are we headed for a recession? There was a consensus that there was going to be a really bad recession. And then we had two straight quarters of negative GDP growth. But no, that wasn't really a recession. And now we're just kind of waiting to see, you know, like what kind of monetary policy is the Fed going to adopt as we approach the November 5th election, because the Fed says it's independent of politics. The administration in power says that it won't artificially manipulate interest rates. But Jerome Powell did address interest rates this week, and I think what he had to say was something that the market wanted to hear.
Yeah, you know, what he said essentially, and I quote, they have seen big declines in core inflation figures, but would like to see more progress. So that's a good thing from the Fed's perspective. But he also gives a little bit of wiggle room, saying we need to see a little bit more, quote, progress. But he did say that they're currently at the peak of their tightening cycle, which means they've kind of resigned the fact that they're not going to be raising interest rates anymore. They're not going to be tightening money supply. And they, and I quote, can and will start into an easing cycle, which is, you know, just Fed speak for we're going to start lowering interest rates by the end of the year. The market loved that, by the way. The market always loves the idea of interest rate drops. But, you know, let's really speak to this quite frankly. You know, the Fed chairman is essentially appointed by the president of the
United States.
The United States,
sure.
And I think you and I could both draw the logical conclusion that if Trump ends up being the Republican nominee and he ends up winning the election, Chairman Powell's days are numbered.
I think he said that. I think Trump has said that. Don't hold me to that, but I think he has certainly intimated that.
So we are not influenced by politics as the Fed chairman. However, we do know definitively that if the Democrat incumbent does not win, we are for sure fired. So what I think we might do is start quantitative easing, i.e. lowering interest rates, right at the beginning of the kind of political, campaign trail, which
is perceived to be after July 4th. But this year we're in a different, unique environment where we pretty much know the both parties' nominees right now.
And the Fed has come out and said we're going to lower interest rates more than likely somewhere around May to July. So, I mean, the timing is very interesting. That said, why would an incumbent president like the fact that interest rates would be lowered? Well, because historically speaking, at least, a lowering of interest rates or quantitative easing is a strong tailwind for a stock market because companies can go borrow money at a lesser interest rate. And they can, and people have more money because quantitative easing or the money supply is no longer being squeezed. So people can go out and buy more goods and services, which means the market goes up, which means the incumbent president has, look at how good the economy is doing per my reign.
So we've talked about these numbers and we traffic in the headlines as it concerns your business as a fiduciary, somebody who's legally obligated to do what's best for your clients. And as it concerns clients and people who are investing toward hopefully financial independence in retirement, what should we do with this information that we've gained here in the past week? Because we've covered jobs reports before, we've covered unemployment rates before, but it is a more of a commitment to lowering rates than we had even a week ago. When we talked a week ago, it was like, okay, there's no March rate cut coming. And we even talked about a headline where it was like, there's not going to be any cuts before the presidential election. Now, Powell's pretty much committed that because your statement you said is he said we can and will. So bottom line, for people who are listening, and they wouldn't be listening if they weren't concerned about how to do retirement smartly, how to save, how to invest smartly, what should they glean from this information that's new to us and new to this show in the past week?
Yeah, I think you'd have to be living under a rock to say that there's not a tremendous amount of economic uncertainty out there. I mean, we've talked exclusively just today about, the jobs report and the impact of the Fed, but let's, sprinkle in a little bit of, election coming up around the corner, maybe a little geopolitical, the wars that are happening around the world. We have a soaring, record-setting market, right? I mean, the S&P and the Dow both have set all-time highs. So what I'm hearing, which speaks right to what you're asking, is what do I do? Because on one hand, I feel like I have two choices as an investor. I can think that everything's great and I can go with the run-of-the-mill investments and put my money in stocks and bonds and, hope that interest rates fall, which would benefit my bonds, and hope that the market continues to rise, which would benefit my stocks. Or I can kind of sit on the sidelines and just kind of wait because there's so much uncertainty. I'm almost, analysis paralysis. I'm looking at it going, I don't want to go in now because I don't want to be an idiot and watch it fall. But at the same time, if I sit on the sidelines, I'm getting a 5% interest rate in my money market. I feel like that's a pretty accurate, pretty good rate of return to sit on the sidelines. But, both of those seem to be the only choices when in reality is there's answers in the middle. And I think that your investments that you make should be guided based upon the purpose of the money.
Mm-hmm.
So if the purpose of your money is that I need this money in the next 5 years, then I would say we're in a period of economic uncertainty to the point where you probably shouldn't put it 100% in stocks. I think that would be a very, very risky play. But we're also, if we're looking at, retirement is 30 years from now, we need to build up some sort of strategy to enter into the market in a disciplined way and essentially buy really good companies at fair prices. So, for example, how do you actually analyze a company? I think large in part, we don't analyze companies. We just look at the market in economic forecasts.
Yeah, or we look at the returns and say, oh, NVIDIA is up like crazy. I better get in.
For sure. And we look at all these economic forecasts like somehow they have the ultimate bearing. I think it's important, but can you name on more than one hand all of the rich economists in the world?
No, I can't.
I can't think of any rich economists in the world, but I can think of plenty of rich stock traders. I can think of Warren Buffett and the list goes on.
Yeah.
So how are they evaluating companies if they don't even care about overall global economics? Well, they're looking at companies and asking themselves questions like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but how much money do they make? Because I think that's important. I don't think that the overall stock market or the overall economy is nearly as important as who's at the helm of a company. How much money do they make? How big is their competitive advantage? Do they have a giant moat around them? For example, Coca-Cola. It would be very difficult to compete against Coca-Cola. And then let's just argue and say, well, what if the company did go out of business? is all the stuff that they have on hand worth more than the book value of what the stock is trading at? All of these things are very, very important. So when you analyze a company like today, like Microsoft, Microsoft is one of those magnificent seven that set all-time highs. But their product lineup is very diversified. They pay a significant dividend. If you look to their debt-to-income ratio, it's well within normal parameters. Their price-to-earnings ratio isn't crazy. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's overvalued. But you look at other companies that might not be running like they are, and you go, whoa, I don't know about – that doesn't look like a good business that I should buy. So long answer – I guess long story long. Long answer is you have to first identify what is the purpose of my money. And by purpose, that assigns a timeline. How much time do I have? Mm-hmm. If I have 20 years, then I have the time to buy good companies, weather storms, and be handsomely rewarded down the line. If I don't have time, or the kind of just gumption, the financial or the emotional strength to weather those storms, well, then I should start looking at alternative asset classes, which we've talked about many, many times on the show. You know, you can put in hedges and positions to say, I want to be invested, but I don't want to be necessarily, I think Warren Buffett says, you don't know who's swimming naked till the tide goes out. Well, you don't want to be necessarily naked in those investments. You want to have some kind of bumpers in the bowling lane.
Yeah. And when you sit for your free consultation with Josh and his team, you know, he'll cover that with you. That was something I wasn't really aware of, that ability to get some percentage of a market's upside and protect myself against the worst of the market's downside. It's well worth your time. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. And you can also make your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. Kind of we use the first segment of the show for current event stuff, and we obviously had a huge current event with the State of the Union address on Thursday night. And, of course, everything in the State of the Union is a proposal, typically, even historically. It's the president's opportunity to outline his vision for where he would like to take the country or take his individual policies over the next year. And one of the things that President Biden talked about on Thursday night is a familiar theme that he has proposed before, is that he's of the opinion that people who are wealthy, corporations who are wealthy, do not pay enough taxes. So he said that he would like to enact business taxes and a tax on billionaires that would bring in some more income into the federal treasury. And, you know, that would certainly be something that you could position as helping to offset what is now an additional $1 trillion worth of debt that we're piling up about every 100 days. He suggested raising the minimum corporate tax rate from 15% to 21%. I'll just start with that. If that were to happen, what would be the fallout for investors? Because that's what you're concerned with at Aptus. Your clients are investors. The corporate tax rate being increased from 15 to 21%, what would the reaction be among investors? How should investors look at that, or how should they react to that to position themselves from being harmed by that?
Yeah, you know, there's always, we talk about Main Street versus Wall Street, and, you know, the impact to Wall Street would be speculative, of course. It would be what kind of impact based upon this particular type of company would it have? I think we'd be naive to think that just because you raise a corporate tax from 15 to 21, that somehow that catches everybody in the net. I mean, we hear oftentimes that this particular corporation didn't pay any taxes.
Yeah, he's said that before. He's often said they don't pay, you know, certain corporations don't pay any tax.
So that would suggest to me that 15, 21, or 48, or 75 really doesn't matter if they're paying none today. That means that they're able to show a zero taxable income, and the tax rate only applies to taxable income.
And they're doing it legally, or they'd be charged with, you know, a crime.
For sure. And I think, you know, the easiest way to explain that would be real estate. If you look at, you know, we oftentimes hear, oh, Donald Trump, he's a real estate investor at his core, and he doesn't pay any taxes, and what a crook. Well, the reality is you could take advantage of the exact same tax codes that Donald Trump takes a part of if you just went and bought a rental property. So you go buy a rental property, and let's say that rental property is generating $10,000 a year in income, just for easy math. And your costs associated with it are $5,000 mm-hmm. a year, which means you have a $5,000 profit. But you're able to do depreciation on real estate investments. And if you've never heard of what depreciation is, it's essentially the idea that there's a useful life for everything. Now, we know that houses go up in value, but it's really not the house that's going up in value. It's the dirt that the house is sitting on that's going up in value. The house itself turns into more of a maintenance issue as time goes on. So it actually gets more expensive. So knowing that, if your house was $250,000 and the land was another $50,000, well, that means that $250,000, if I depreciated that over 25 years, I get to write off $10,000 every single year, which means I made five, I write off 10, I actually have a negative $5,000 income. So does it matter what the tax rate is?
No.
No, because I don't have any taxable income to even apply it to.
Yeah.
And I think this is oftentimes where the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater. As we say, we're going to raise corporate taxes or we're going to raise taxes on the quote unquote rich. You're not catching who you think you're going to catch in the net. And what ends up happening is the upper middle class takes the brunt of that hit. And this is no different. Where is that? If the company does in fact absorb that, let's say they do have taxable income and they go from 15 to 21, I think you'll probably see an increase in their price of the costs of goods that they sell, which will in turn, who does the tax on the rich really affect? Well, if they just pass the price of that down onto the goods that you're buying, I think we just tax the middle and upper middle class kind of pro rata in a way, right? Yeah. So I'm not a huge fan of increasing the taxes on corporations, and history has proved that to be not necessarily beneficial either.
So that's one of his proposals. The minimum corporate tax rate would go under his proposal from 15 to 21. Then he also proposes the overall corporate tax rate, increasing it from 21 to 28. So I'm of the same opinion as you that businesses are in business to make money. They have attorneys who know the law. They find ways, and even if they incur an additional cost, they're going to have to find a way to pass that along to someone, because very few of them have such big margins that they can afford to just eat it all themselves. And that really, I would say, is not really good business. If I'm a stockholder in that business, I'm not going to be happy with that. And the president also said, and he has often said this, that billionaires should pay a minimum 25% personal income tax, and he has lofty numbers that would raise like $500 billion over the next 10 years. But again, you're talking about taxing people who have access to the most sophisticated tax strategies, and that sounds like evil and nefarious, but a big part of what you do at Aptus on behalf of your clients is to know tax law and to come up with tax strategies for people to avoid paying more in taxes legally than they have to when they're drawing their investments out as income when they reach retirement.
Of course. Now, I think we would be remiss not to say that as much as Joe Biden, President Biden, has said he's going to do these tax changes, I believe so far through his presidency, he's changed taxes not at all. So he can say he ran on a campaign before saying he was going to do all these different things to the tax. He was going to raise capital gains rates from 20 to 25. They're still 20. They haven't changed in, you know, the better part of 4 years. So I think this is really all just politicking. However, you know, to reference back to what we do at Aptus, it is not just the rate of return that you receive. It's how much of that you actually get to keep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so important when you're doing planning, particularly retirement income planning, that you don't, and we see this all the time if you go on online calculators, well, you need 90% of your pre-tax, blah, blah, blah. They give these kind of anecdotal percentages. The reality is you live off your net income. You don't live off your gross. So you can make $200,000 a year, and then you talk to people and say, well, what's your paycheck every 2 weeks? Well, it's $3,000. Well, that's six. That's not 20, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find out what that number is and then create the most efficient way of achieving those numbers, meaning that we want to get as close to the net number with a gross number as we can, keeping that government in check as much as we can by sending them as little as possible legally.
Yeah, there's not a government store that I know of. There's not a product that I'm buying from the government to put money in their coffers. They're getting it from taxes, and that's okay. But as just speaking for myself individually, I don't want to pay more taxes than I absolutely have to pay. And that's one of the things that has stood out to me from my conversations with Josh over the last few years as we've done this show, is that tax strategy is a big part of a sound retirement strategy, of a sound retirement blueprint. That's what they specialize in at Aptus, the blueprint, the whole entire picture, everything under the umbrella. Taxes are a part of that. Investments are a part of that. And so in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about investments and what do you do if you prioritized investing, but you're stuck in bad investments that have a time constraint on them. 614-917-1040 to set up your free consultation at Aptus. 614-917-1040 or Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Thanks for joining us on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. Aptus is located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750, and they offer you a free consultation. Would you like to get some peace of mind, some information, some good information, some accurate information, information you might need as you hopefully prioritize saving, investing, not just saving, but investing and working toward financial independence and retirement? That's what they specialize in at Aptus. I'm an Aptus client, a very happy Aptus client, and I didn't become an Aptus client until I sat with the consultation with Josh and his team. And that didn't happen for the first couple years that I knew Josh because, as I say all the time, it's not a low-pressure environment. It's a no-pressure environment. I initiated the conversation. And so, you know, Josh is very successful, and he does not go out and stand on a street corner and spin a sign to get people to come in. But through word of mouth and through the returns that he gets people, he has many, many, many clients. And perhaps you and Josh would be a fit. So no better way to find that out than by sitting for the free consultation. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. And they don't just have one strategy there. They have many strategies. That's why they call it a blueprint. And so you can set that up also online by going to Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. And I'm sure you inherit clients, Josh, who have been involved in investing in retirement at other places or on their own, like Sherry and I were. And you may, as you assess what they have done, come across investment choices that they have made that at the time were at least well-planned or well-thought-out strategies that may not be good strategies now. And that's a lot of times because market conditions change and returns change. And I'm thinking of somebody who maybe years ago put money aside and invested it in an annuity contract or in some other investment vehicle that made a lot of sense because of the percentage return that they were guaranteed to get. But now those interest rates have changed and market conditions have changed. How do you navigate those waters and getting people out of something into something better?
It happens all the time. And sometimes well-intentioned decisions and not necessarily at the fault of the previous advisor. You know, hindsight's 20/20. We look at things and go, why did we do that? Maybe it was a good choice at the time, but unfortunately, you know, since you use the term annuity, unfortunately, a lot of annuity contracts are sold by exclusively commission-based agents. So what happens is you sell that annuity, and let's say it has a 10-year duration. And by duration, I mean you have to leave your money in that annuity for 10 years, mm-hmm. or there's going to be some sort of penalty to pay to get out. Well, I got, you know, the agent gets paid his upfront commission right out of the gate and then kind of just goes into no man's land. You never hear from that person until the 10 years is up and wants to talk about doing a new one. So you're kind of left holding the bag when in reality, you know, annuity contracts can be managed. Most annuity contracts allow for 10% liquidity every single year without any penalty. So, you know, without doing a lot of work, you could say I could get 10% out every year to kind of dollar cost average back into higher rates. Certain annuity contracts have provisions in them that kind of protect the insurance company at your detriment, but sometimes that backfires on the insurance company depending upon what interest rates do. Mm-hmm. So there can be, you know, ways to get out during that penalty period, even to your benefit rather than your detriment, depending upon what's going on with market conditions. There's a lot of ways that you can kind of manage that process, but I think the takeaway is all is not lost. When I talk to folks, oftentimes they just look purely at, well, this was a 10-year deal, and that means I have to stay in for 10 years.
Yeah.
And conversation over. Oftentimes, I'll tell people they have access to 10% every single year, and they go, well, I thought it was a 10-year deal. Well, it is a 10-year deal. The rules span for 10 years. But another rule is you're allowed to get 10% out every year, and you can have both at the same time. And I think, you know, when you start talking annuities, particularly when you get into fixed indexed and variable annuities, There's a lot of nomenclature involved there. There's a lot of details. It can be really, really confusing. And if you've ever tried to read through an annuity contract, you know, it'll cure insomnia. It's long. It's brutal. It's, you know, a lot of algorithms are written in there. It's difficult to follow. So I don't blame anybody. You know, if we just looked at a variable annuity, for example, and I said, what are the fees that are associated with it? Well, you have a mortality and expense fee. You might have an admin fee. You might have a rider fee for a death benefit, a living benefit, or even a return of premium. You're going to have your mutual fund fees, but they're actually called subaccounts instead of an annuity. And then you're going to have your duration, which might have a contingent deferred sales charge fee. And you go, I don't even know what I bought anymore, right? So if nothing else, we can serve as a way to explain. We start with, this is what you actually have. Now, two, remember, we talk all the time about money has to have a purpose. When you purchased this, what was the purpose? And does that purpose still exist? Because it's okay to make term insurance is a perfect example. Term insurance has a purpose. Mm-hmm. I was young. I wanted to cover my family for a finite period of time. And now my kids are all out of the house. It doesn't serve a purpose anymore. So I'm going to get rid of it. Doesn't mean it was a bad idea to purchase 20 years ago.
Right.
Similarly with annuity contracts, there might have been a very logical reason why you did it. Doesn't mean that the reason still exists. And just know that there are ways that you can improve your situation. You just have to know what you have and know what your options are.
Well, and I think most people probably on, if they're like me, if they tie up their money for a certain period of time, what I know is how long do I have it tied up for and what kind of rate of return am I going to get? I don't know. Probably don't know. I might know if I had to pay a fee up front. I might know that. But I certainly don't know those other numbers, and I'd have to head to the medicine cabinet and grab the Tylenol if I tried to make sense of it myself. That's why it is, in my opinion, definitely worth it to have a professional investment counselor, a fiduciary, somebody who's legally obligated to do what is best for you, handling investments. I don't want to handle that anymore. I don't want to worry about making a big mistake, making a mistake I can't come back from. That's what they specialize in at Aptus. They are fiduciaries. They do what is best for you. They're legally obligated to do that, and you can set up your consultation to learn more about that and to do a checkup on your investments. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Their web address is aptuswealth.com, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. They're located in Lewis Center. Yes, if you're outside the area, you can become a client, but they'd prefer, if possible, if you're in the area, sit for your consultation, but they do all kinds of interactions with clients digitally. That's one thing that we have from the pandemic is the commonality of doing a lot of business on Zoom. But if possible, for that consultation, sit in the office. And what you'll find is that they don't have one particular vehicle. And you mentioned a word when you were talking about the annuity contract that, you know, might not be performing now like it was before. You mentioned commissions and you mentioned fees. And that's what I think people hear that. They go, take people through. You, I'm sure, have vehicles that have them and you have vehicles that don't. Should people be nervous when they hear fee, when they hear commission? Or, you know, are they reacting to something that maybe they have an emotional reaction to, but they don't have a fact-based basis for it, their emotional reaction to it?
I think both can be true at the same time. I think anytime you look at fees, commissions, you should be concerned because those fees and commissions are coming out of your money. Mm-hmm. So you should be just like you should be concerned. And what's the price of eggs? Well, just because the price of eggs is X doesn't mean it's not a good deal. It just depends on how much you like eggs, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right? Well, similarly, a lot of these fees and commissions fees are four things that you would really like. But oftentimes they slap fees on for these additional riders that you don't fit your purpose of your money. So you're paying for things that you don't need. Well, that doesn't make sense. Commissions, of course, you know, you're paying somebody to work with them. It's a matter of whether or not it's an equitable exchange. If you're only making 1%, but the commission is 10%, this is not an equitable exchange. The person that's selling you this product is making more than you are. That doesn't make any sense. So that's why it's so critical, I think, to work with a fiduciary, because fiduciaries have to disclose all of this information. Mm-hmm. So you can make a judgment call on what actually makes sense for you. Where if you work with a broker, a lot of the information that we're laying out here is not required to be disclosed to you in an easy manner. So for example, remember that contract I told you about?
Yeah.
You're going to get a contract. I can tell you, I've been doing this for 25 years. I've had maybe three people ever read it because it's so cumbersome that you wouldn't do it. But if you're a fiduciary, you have to line item out all of those details kind of in cliff notes, an easy digestible, you have to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't explain it to you in a way to understand, now I'm liable. Not the insurance company, not you, but me. So it's critical that you just get on a level playing field. Now, I'll be the first to admit that if you ever see me on the side of the road with my hood up on my car, it's just because I'm trying to block the sun until the AAA gets there, yeah. Whoever the tow truck. I don't think you need to be a financial expert any more than I need to be a mechanic. But I think you need to learn enough that if I drop my car off at the mechanic and I say, you know, the lights aren't coming on, and he says it's because you need new tires, I need to at least have enough understanding of how a car works to know that I'm not getting a fair deal here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, something suspicious.
So I at least need to know that, you know, batteries cause lights and alternators, but I don't even know how to fix it. Well, similarly, when it comes to financial products, it's my job to educate you enough to understand that batteries cause electricity and not tires.
Yeah, and I've said that many times. That's what really put Sherry and I at ease, was going in and sitting with Josh, is that we felt like we really understood planning and strategizing toward our retirement, not just investing and hoping. That peace of mind, I can't put a price on it. You make your own judgment, but you won't be able to make that judgment unless you sit for the consultation by calling 614-917-1040. And what I've learned, too, through interacting with you over the last couple of years is that insurance companies, I thought they were just there in case, you know, a loved one died or I wrecked my car or something like that. They deal in investments, and banks deal in investments. And I knew that, CDs and stuff like that. But I wonder how much of that landscape is changing now, because we occasionally hear, oh, like this little bank is being gobbled up by this bank, or, you know, I assume they're gobbled up because they're attractive, they have a good balance sheet, or they're being gobbled up because the opposite of that is true. I see headlines recently that since 2020, more than 100 banks have closed offices in and around Ohio, and not a lot of them have started elsewhere. We have a bank that just opened in my area that's a nice, big, impressive building. I don't think there are any people in there working. I think it's all like automated. So how much of bank closures and how much of that industry is changing, and is it changing for the good of customers and for the good of investors?
I believe large in part it's changing for the good of customers. Now, obviously, if you worked at a local bank and the bank got closed, it's not good for you that you used to work there. But competitiveness is really picked up now that interest rates have picked up. If you remember back when we first started raising interest rates, I started saying, if you're not getting at least 3% in your savings account, you need to start looking around. If you're not getting 4, if you're not getting 5, and now we're all the way up into, you know, north of 5% as far as money market rates go. But people will tell us all the time, yeah, but my bank's still paying me 10 basis points. They're still paying me 0.25%. How do I fix that? Well, the way that you fix it is you leave that bank and you go to another bank. And non-brick and mortar banks have become increasingly popular. And by non-brick and mortar, I mean banks that don't have a location. It's just an online bank. You go online, you set up the, and these are not small banks, by the way. You know, you can go to Goldman Sachs or Citibank or all the, I challenge you to find a Goldman Sachs bank, retail bank anywhere in Columbus. It doesn't mean it's a crummy little small bank. It just means they don't have retail locations where you can go deposit your check. So you're able to take a picture of your check with your phone, direct deposit it to the bank, and get 2 to 3 times as high an interest rate at a very economically viable, good, strong quality bank. Now, I think that's going to become increasingly popular as the younger generation continues to get more and more comfortable with that. Now, you and I were kind of talking offline. You said, am I really that old man?
I said, old man. It's like old man issue. Like, I'm terrified of that. Like, does that really work? Like, how do you deposit a check without taking it into a physical location?
And I told you that I try and go to a bank no less than every 3 months, right? Or no more than every 3 months. So, you know, I'm obviously comfortable with that. Now, with that is going to come challenges associated with online banking, meaning how do we make sure that this information is all encrypted? How do we make sure that there's no data leaks? How do we ensure that we're not getting fraudulent checks? The list kind of goes on and on. But it does not surprise me that small regional bank branches are going to be closing at a significant rate, or at least getting smaller.
So when people hear that, and if they're in my generation, my guess is that that certainly raises the two scariest words that I think now are pretty common, and that's identity theft. I'm not sure that anybody's identity is as secure as they really think it is, but in the investing world, is it, I don't know, common, possible, whatever the word is, however the question can best be phrased, there are a lot of sophisticated thieves out there. And I just kind of wonder, like, I know people are going to be nervous about identity theft and losing their nest egg, their retirement, their investment, as we convert to more and more digital banking. Maybe that's irrational. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's more secure that way than it was before. But how do you address that with clients when they bring it up?
Yeah, I think large in part, your money that you have, you know, let's think about identity theft with your credit card. If somebody steals your credit card information and goes and buys something, the credit card company, at least all the credit card companies I can think of, will make you whole.
Mm-hmm.
They have a coverage against that. So is it an increased risk for the credit card company? Absolutely. Is it increased risk for you? Not really.
No.
Banking will be the same and investments are the same. So, for example, we clear through Schwab. We're required to have cybersecurity policies. Schwab backs up your money up to a certain degree. So are you ever going to get ripped off? No. But Schwab can be ripped off very, very significantly. Where I see the kind of sophisticated identity theft things coming in is actually just through email fraud.
Mm.
For example, I probably on a daily basis get DocuSigns from an email address that looks very legitimate. Until you click on it, it'll say from Schwab. They know somehow they figured out that we do business with Schwab. You forgot to do this DocuSign, sign here, sign here. But if you click on the email address, it's from, you know, xyqrp@gmail.com. Those are very easy to get tricked on. Or, for example, I'll get an email from an email extension that somebody who works for me and says, I just need to change my direct deposit information. Please send over the form to do so. And if you click on the email address, it's off by one number. They somehow mirrored the email. These are very, very sophisticated and very, not sophisticated, but very difficult to keep up with. You know, I kind of went off on a tangent, but I think my takeaway here is identity theft, and I have tons of clients that work in cybersecurity at very significant banks. It's a huge problem for banks. It's a huge problem for them trying to navigate it. But I don't think that there's a significant risk to the end customer, i.e. you and I.
How schooled is law enforcement at protecting the authenticity of people's money, whether it's through the banking system, through retirement accounts, things like that?
Well, first, I'd like to say that, you know, I'm a huge advocate of law enforcement.
Yep, so am I.
However, if you look at kind of everything that law enforcement does, we try and be proactive as possible, but it's kind of like prisoners in a prison. They have all day to think about how to manipulate the prison.
Yeah.
And usually the law enforcement is behind the curve to some degree, and then they make adjustments. And that's what we're seeing in cybersecurity is there's all these new strategies, and we're trying to figure out where they're going. It's like coming up with the flu shot, right? Mm-hmm. What's going to be the popular flu this year? We don't really know. We don't always get it right. But we're anticipating what it could be. And unfortunately, there's just cybersecurity or identity theft, rather, is amongst us. It's never going away. Unfortunately, the easiest populace of people to prey on is the older generation. So, you know, the idea of financial elder abuse is what they call it, is just, I mean, it's on the rise. And with baby boomers retiring every day, that's just going to become a bigger and bigger, I hate to call it an industry, but that's kind of what it's become.
Yeah, no doubt about it. If you'd like to ask these kinds of questions, if you'd like to gain understanding in these kinds of matters, you can do that during your free, no obligation consultation with Josh and the Aptus team, 614-917-1040 to set that up. They're located in Lewis Center, right off Route 750. Very easy to get to. Plenty of parking, free parking. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. We're a few months out from presidential election. There's always, no matter how a presidential election goes, if there's a change in administrations, a change in monetary policy, tax policy, something that affects investments and retirement. So, what should clients be doing now? Because we might have a change coming in January of 2025. We might not. Are we too close for people to make moves? For people like you who assess these conditions, to adopt a strategy that's maybe different than people have had before because they come to you as a new client? How do you address that question when it comes up? Is like, what do you plan for, Josh? Because are you planning on this party getting reelected, or are you planning on a new party coming to power?
Yeah, I think you have to have a primary, contingent, tertiary, no different. You were talking about law enforcement, and when they go do, you know, if they're going to go serve a search warrant or something like that, they have to cover kind of all the what ifs.
Yeah.
They don't just blindly run in the front door and go, hope this plays out. Well, similarly, you know, you have to come up with a plan with what if the incumbent gets elected? What if he doesn't? What if Congress is controlled by this side?
That's another aspect.
What if Congress isn't? What if the Fed does, in fact, lower interest rates in May? What if they don't? And you got to kind of invest accordingly. Now, when I say that, a lot of people go, oh, so you're just going to invest 50 on one side and 50 on the other, and I'm just going to end up getting zero every single time. That's not the case. It's not directly proportional. But let me give you an example. You could say, well, I think that the stock market is going to continue to run. But what if it doesn't? Well, another person could say, I think it's going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
What if it doesn't? So, you know, if you just looked at that in a kind of in a wind tunnel and said, what are my choices? Well, here's your choice. Put your money in the S&P 500. If it goes up, you win. If it goes down, you lose. So whoever you are on which side of that coin, you're either going to be right or wrong, but that's the only two choices.
Yeah, baked into the cake.
Or you could say, I think there's enough economic uncertainty out there that I'm not willing to put all my chips on either side, because I also think that there's enough good reasons why the market might go up. And I'm just too close. I'm on the 5-yard line of retirement planning. I don't want to have, I have a 401k today. I don't want to have a 201k 3 years from now, and then I have to decide if I'm going to work longer. So I would like to put some training wheels on that approach. So if the market goes up, I'd like to, you know, have the potential to earn 15 to 20% of it. If it goes down, I'd like to be insulated to get against a certain amount of drop. I'd be willing to assume an 8 or 10% fall, but no more than that. That would derail me. You can structure an investment to do just that. And I think that's what people don't really realize. And when I say that, people go, that sounds too good to be true, or how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
It's not new. It's not a new concept. It's just that up and downside seems to be in a very good cycle right now in the market, where you can get a lot of upside and still get a lot of downside protection, where oftentimes in the past, because of where interest rates were and volatility, you know, you were giving up so much of the upside that it probably didn't make sense.
Yeah, and that's one of the vehicles that was attractive to Sherry and I. And the other part of it is, too, if you're on the cusp of retirement, like I'm looking at some vehicles in the past that have not given people much of a return. We've chatted about the inverted yield curve, which basically means that, you know, it's good for people to have their money tied up for a shorter term than a longer term. And that condition doesn't prevail forever.
No, and we're finally narrowing that gap, which is good. You know, I think historically speaking, there hasn't been a time in history where there's been an inverted yield curve where the market hasn't declined significantly until, well, now, we could argue, right? But the closer and closer we get to being rewarded for leaving our money somewhere for a longer period of time, the better for the overall economy and the better for you. So we're getting there, but we're still seeing, you know, the best CD rates seem to be about 6 to 9 months. You can't get any more for 12 to 24 months. So this is all the challenges that we're facing when we're looking at retirement planning. What if interest rates go down? Well, that's good for bonds, but what if we don't go that direction? What if we go up? That's bad. What do I do? What about CDs? I just want to put some money in safe, but in 6 months, I'm going to have to reevaluate this and I might not be able to make the same amount of money. Man, the stock market's at all-time highs. There's all these decisions. And again, that's where you come up with your primary, secondary, tertiary. What can we do to take advantage of all scenarios?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a ton of options out there. You know, we've hit pretty much all of them today. Treasuries, there are bonds, there are stocks, there are annuity contracts. Rest assured, they do not have one preferred vehicle at Aptus. You'll have the array of options in front of you. Josh will discuss it with you in a way that you can understand it. Then the choice becomes, which blueprint course do you choose? We had several options. That's an individual decision. 614-917-1040 to set up your free consultation. 614-917-1040. You can also make your appointment online at aptuswealth.com, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Not far from 23 and 270, right off Route 750. The show replays on Saturday at noon. Josh joins me Monday at 12:30 for Money Monday. Josh, thanks for your time. Good to talk to you.
You as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.